Welcome to our podcast, From the Ground Up, where we interview startup founders exploring their journeys, their success, challenges, and lessons learned. We hope you'll be inspired in discovering what it takes to build a thriving startup. I'm your host, Jake Aaron Villarreal, and here with us today, we have Cheryl Sue Hoy, founder and CEO of Tiny Health. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jake. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us here today. A little bit about Cheryl. She's an accomplished and repeat founder, including a successful consumer software startup that was acquired by Walmart Labs in 2013. She's since launched Tiny Health, the first at-home gut microbiome testing platform for families using metagenomics. She'll tell us all about it and why it's important. Make sure to listen to the whole episode so you understand what it is, the problem it solves, and how it can help your kids and family in the future. Before we dive in here, Cheryl, on your background, where are you calling in from today?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, all right. Go Texas. Yeah. Are you originally from there?
No, in fact, we moved here about 2 years ago, just a little bit over from California. So I spent about maybe over 10 years in the Bay Area. And each kid, we moved out to the East Bay further and further. And at that point, towards the end of the pandemic, we felt like it didn't make sense to stay in California. We'd been there for so long, and we knew that Austin was a thriving startup scene. So we decided to move here. But originally, I'm from Malaysia in Southeast Asia.
Very cool. I like that. What was, we'll talk about your company, Tiny Health, and excited to really learn the details in your journey there. What was the process of being from Malaysia and coming to the US? What was the driving force around that?
I actually got a scholarship from the government of Malaysia to go to college in New York. Basically, I went to Cornell University. So it was a full ride, which is really nice out of high school. You know, in Malaysia, come from a really humble family. We didn't really have savings for my upper education or college. So it was really cool when we have a huge national exam during high school to like rank all the kids. Everyone was ranked on the same examination. And I happened to be the top 100 in my country in that year. Yeah. And so the scholarship was definitely not easy to achieve. I'm kind of in a minority group in Malaysia. I'm of Chinese origin, and we're a minority in my own country. So for someone like me to get a full ride from the government was quite rare. And I'm really thankful because the scholarship from Cornell was about $250,000 for 4 years, including room and board. So it was really nice to get that. And then, you know, it was really my first time out of the country, out of Malaysia, because we didn't have a lot of money to go on trips, so I never left the country. And at 18, I took the first journey on my own without, you know, I had no family in the U.S., had never been here. I didn't get the luxury of doing these college tours to figure out what university was ideal for me. But at the time, I wanted to study chemical engineering, and Cornell was ranked one of the top ones in Ivy League. So I picked that. But very quickly discovered my heart wasn't in the lab, you know. And so I switched out to operations research and industrial engineering. I knew I wanted to be an engineer, and my scholarship was for engineering. So I switched to operations research and industrial engineering because that was the more business-like engineering major. There's a lot of math and stats involved. And, you know, a lot of people from that major went on to be management consultants or banking and finance.
What was your path coming out of school? What did you get into the management consulting track, or what did you, where'd you start?
Yeah, I actually started as a finance analyst or business analyst for an environmental engineering consulting firm. And I moved to Arizona from New York, followed a boy there actually out of college. So I did that for a little bit. And then, yeah, I got another scholarship from Cornell to do my master's in engineering. So that's when I went back to Cornell and then finished that up in a year. And then I moved to New York, and then finally was a strategic like management consultant at Opera Solutions. So that was when, you know, I had always like wanted to be a management consultant at the time when it was trendy, back when it was trendy. But unfortunately, at the time, it was interesting because it was in 08 when I graduated from my master's and got the job in New York. It was a downturn. It was the start of the financial downturn. And so a lot of the management consulting jobs ended up not being strategic, but more about cost cutting, outsourcing mm-hmm. the IT department to India, basically. So a lot of those kinds of projects. And it was kind of a miserable time. So that was actually the genesis of my first startup that I built in New York in 09, actually, towards the tail end of the financial crisis. A lot of my friends in iBanking and whatnot were being laid off from the, you know, feels familiar now, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, we're experiencing that a little bit now in a different sector. But like that time, a lot of my consulting and finance friends were being laid off. And then that's actually how the New York tech startup scene kind of grew, like out of those layoffs, right? So it was kind of part of that scene, a lot of the rah-rah of like, we're New York tech and we can do it too. So I quit my consulting job because I was so miserable in it. And I started my first company in 09. And, you know, we ended up working on that. And, you know, it's a really cool kind of tech scene at the time because New York was just building its ecosystem up. So it's part of a lot of the initial founder breakfasts and a lot of, you know, a lot of the co-working spaces at General Assembly and the first WeWork labs, with the first 100 entrepreneurs as part of that labs. And so that was kind of a really cool scene to be part of. And then ended up selling that company to Walmart Labs in 2013. So we moved out to the West Coast, to the Bay Area for the acquisition.
That's great. It's we, you know, there's a lot of companies that are started, but they don't always get acquired or go public or have a successful exit. So it's good that you've had, you know, that full cycle experience under your belt. We're going to talk about your company, Tiny Health, and I'm sure there's some lessons learned that you've applied to your new company. But before we do that, give us a little insight about what inspired you to create Tiny Health and what's the problem you're solving?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right before I started Tiny Health, I was an entrepreneur in residence, or founder in residence is what they call it at Silicon Valley Bank. So I had about a year and a half to really figure out what I wanted to do next from my previous startup or previous like gig, sorry. For my next company, I even explored kind of getting into venture capital and raising a small fund because a lot of my friends seemed to be doing that at the time. This was like in 2020 maybe. But I ended up deciding against that because you know, the part that I didn't like the most about being a founder is fundraising, and being a VC, especially a solo GP, you end up fundraising all the time. So it's less about helping founders, which is the part that I enjoy, but more about managing your LPs and raising money perpetually. Mm-hmm. So decided that wasn't for me. Started to figure out what I wanted to do next, what, you know, company I wanted to build. And, you know, because I built a consumer company that I pivoted to be retail focused. So we ended up with a B2B model, but it was not a SaaS model. And obviously software SaaS, you know, in the previous years has been really hot. So initially wanted to build something around the SaaS space, but kind of had a technical co-founder I joined up with to explore some ideas when I was in EIR. But nothing really clicked between the two of us, right? He went off to build his own consumer health company, actually. And I, you know, initially, I remember like three of my closest kind of tech friends. We were sitting in a co-working space, kind of just like we each wanted to build a company and we were debating ideas. And they were kind of like, oh, there's this old company called Ubiome in the gut microbiome space that, you know, was very promising, but their user experience sucked. Look at this report. My friend Sharon said, you know, like was pulling the report out, and I was telling them my story about my daughter. I had a C-section with my daughter about 6 years ago, and how I learned a lot about the gut microbiome and how C-section babies' guts look very different from vaginally born babies because they're not passing through the vaginal canal and they're being exposed to the mom's antibiotics during operations and how that leads to more risk of eczema, food allergies, asthma, and a host of immune conditions. So I was explaining to my friends, you know, this kind of idea around gut health, baby gut health. So that's when my friend was like, you should build a gut health testing company around mom and baby's, you know, health. And I remember at a time, all three of them were like, oh my gosh, this is so on brand for you. And I was resisting that because I felt like, oh, this is such a, like, you know, like another mom building a mom company, right? I was really resisting that. No, I want to build a software SaaS company. It's funny, but you know, from that initial seeding of an idea, I kept coming back to it. Like, geez, I am really passionate about it. I was reading a ton of papers and studies around gut health and how 80% of our immune system is in our gut and you're acquiring it in early life, right? In the first 1,000 days. So if mom's gut and vaginal microbiome isn't in the right balance, you may not even be passing it on to your baby if you had a vaginal birth. So I learned all about how your immune system is really informed by these bugs in your gut. So it's so essential for human health, longevity, health span, lifespan, gut-brain axis connection. So it's so crucial. And I was super passionate about it, you know, and I began to adopt a lot of these, you know, gut, like, you know, gut-friendly lifestyle. So over the course of maybe a year, exploring other ideas, I kept being pulled back to this idea. And then I was pregnant with my second child at the time. And so remember, I mentioned I had a C-section with my daughter, and she has eczema and all these health conditions. And so I was like, oh, with my son, I was worried I was going to have another C-section again. And so I decided, yeah, maybe I should start this company so I can prevent these chronic conditions for him if I did have a C-section, and I can find out early on if his gut was imbalanced and I can course correct. So it really came out of a need, a personal need, a personal, you know, kind of finding. And, you know, I did some research and I couldn't find a gut test for babies because the baby's gut is fundamentally different from an adult gut. You can't use an adult stool test for a baby. So I decided to accept that this is really what I'm passionate about. And now, you know, as a founder, kind of like advising other founders who are like exploring new ideas and what companies to start, I think it's actually really interesting if you have a certain perspective, personal perspective on, mm-hmm. you know, like solving a problem that where there's no solution yet in this world, right? And because you are solving the problem for yourself, you not only have that insight that other people, you know, who's just looking for a startup to build may have, you are also personally invested in the solution. So I do like, you know, I do some angel investing on the side, but not so active anymore. But I do look out for founders now who, or in the past, who like have this perspective, this very kind of personal perspective, because they really bring a unique angle to the table.
Yeah, that's great. And passion too. And if it's solving your own problem and it can help others, it's, you know, how would you not be wanting to make that more available and hopefully solve other problems? So I just want to go back a little bit to the test itself. So mm-hmm. how exactly is the test administered?
Mm. Yeah, it's basically an at-home test. So, you know, with COVID, it's made a lot of at-home testing more accessible and available and acceptable too. So you kind of get a kit like that and you get a swab that looks like this. This is just peanut butter, don't worry. But this is how much stool you need to collect from a soiled diaper if you're sampling a baby or a toddler, or from a soiled toilet paper. So this is how little you need. There's the yellowish part is actually a drying desiccant, so it kind of preserves the sample, the DNA of the stool, the bacteria in the sample. So when you close it, it's kind of seals, like, you know, there's no oxygen that can get into it. And you put it in a prepaid envelope, drop it into your mailbox, any USPS mailbox. It gets to our lab extracts the DNA of the stool, of the microbes in the stool, and then in about a few weeks you get a report back online that shows you all the microbes in your gut, including, you know, most of it will be bacteria, but they may be viruses, hopefully not parasites, but they could be parasites, fungi as well. So we give you a report on what all the bugs in your gut, are they in range, out of range? What does it mean for your health? And how can you improve your gut health from a dietary, nutrition, supplement, or lifestyle perspective?
Great. So for the listeners that aren't watching the video, it looks like almost like a Q-tip or something you would pull out of a capsule, and then you would swab the diaper and take what you need to take out of that. And then you put it back in this little capsule, and it mm-hmm. sounds like you're kind of done with it. It's about 3.5, maybe 4 inches, something like that. Looks pretty streamlined. What's the results tell you, and what can you do once you get the results? It's one thing to test, but then what do you do with the results when you get the tests?
Yeah. Our flagship product is the pregnancy gut test, stool test and vaginal test, and then the baby test from 0 to 3 years of age. But now we have an older kid, 3 to 18 year old children's test, and an adult test as well. Because we created this primarily initially to solve my own problem, right? As a parent, I don't want to get a result, like a report about my child's health and not be able to do anything about it. So we really, there's a really personalized action plan for you from a diet perspective. So if you have a baby under 6 months, they're only breastfeeding. So what can you do from that perspective, from mom's diet, if they're breastfeeding, or formula, which formula could be a better option. And then as the child eats more solids, then what foods should the growing baby consume based on their gut needs? And because we chart out the developmental needs of the baby's gut, that's so intrinsically tied to their immune system. And then from a lifestyle perspective, we used to spend 90% of our time outdoors in farms and, you know, all that, and getting exposed to a lot of the microbiome from nature, from pets and animals. Now it's the reverse. We spend 90% indoors, maybe more, right? Maybe some people spend 99% of their time indoors, especially during winter time. So we're really not being exposed enough to a diversity of microbes, and the decreased diversity is causing a lot of issues like allergies and chronic conditions is contributing to it. So we do give advice from a lifestyle perspective, reminding people to get outside, to get a pet and things like that. And we show the diversity of your gut. So, you know, for regular adults, people really love our tests because we tell them specifically maybe what fiber rich foods to eat, what proteins to eat, if they have, their guts have the microbes that can support vitamin production, for example, and whether you may need extra supplementation. So it's very actionable, basically. And you can see if you're deficient in certain categories, like bifidobacteria is one of the most popular probiotic, you may be completely deficient in that. And a lot of people do the test to find out and then follow our action plan and retest in 3 months. And they see that going from 0 to 5 or 10%. So you can really biohack your way to improve your gut. And most of the time, the symptoms that, come along with a deficient gut will disappear once you fix those metrics.
That's great. You know, it takes a long time for new products and services to get approved through the FDA. And, you know, doctors oftentimes don't have the time to go out and do the research. They essentially are just, you know, what medications are being pushed to them they might try and use from pharmaceutical sales and whatnot. But not being a doctor and being able to create a new product or service is, you know, some might say, that's great, I want to try it. Some might say, well, if it's not a doctor, I don't necessarily want to try something. But for you as an innovator, walk through the process of, if you're not an expert in a field, being able to become an expert, being able to acquire the right talent and advisors to build a world-class team, that you don't have to be the doctor, but you've got the outside experts that are guiding you to create a product that might not exist. What's that like? Because a lot of people have ideas. How do you actually execute on that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something I also get asked a lot. First of all, I want to clarify, so that what we offer at Tiny Health is not medical advice. it really isn't a diagnostic test at all. It is a wellness test. So it is a category of tests. They're in a wellness category where it's educational. You know, we're informing you all the bugs that are in your gut. You know, it's your data. Like you deserve to know what's in your gut, right? And, you know, just kind of add on a lot of evidence-based cited studies on, you know, these bugs are related to XYZ conditions and or, you know, related to health. And, you know, here are the foods you can eat to replenish that if you're missing certain key beneficial bacteria. So that's kind of what we do. It's a wellness test. And what I learned through starting this company before I started the company was that it takes an average 10 to 15 years for any groundbreaking academic research to be adopted in clinical practice. Maybe rightfully so. It takes time. Because you need to go through like clinical studies, there needs to be enough evidence, but most of all doctors today, you know, conventional doctors that you go see, as your primary care, they went to school maybe 10, 20 years ago when microbiome is just not taught in medical school at all. Right. I think nutrition is not even really a focus of medical school. You don't really learn about diet and supplements and, you know, sort of like preventative care. So doctors are great when you have an acute problem, like maybe a stomach bug where you need some treatment for immediately. If you break a leg or you need operations, that's great. But the problems we're tackling are a lot of chronic conditions that are affecting kids or adults today, right? And a lot of these chronic conditions like allergies, asthma, eczema, you know, adult autoimmune conditions or IBD, IBS, bloating issues, are more connected to the gut. So something like, you know, that your conventional doctors may not have went to school for. So for me, like what I learned is that if you're getting your microbiome, your gut microbiome from your mom in the early days, and it's sort of developing in the first 3 years, like this is really the time to course correct if there are major imbalances. For example, we see some four-month-old babies with 90% E. coli type bugs, and that's highly inflammatory for their immune system. So it should be maybe 10% E. coli, shouldn't be 90% E. coli in a baby. And for adults, we should have zero E. coli technically in our guts. So there, you know, and you can course correct that within a month. We've seen now with so many, we're supporting tens and thousands of families now that in 1 month, you know, if you follow our protocol, you can turn a baby's gut around like from 90% E. coli, you can reduce that down to 10%. And I wouldn't say, you know, the kind of solutions we're offering are, you know, they need FDA approval or they're medically indicated. You can solve them through natural means like breastfeeding if the mom had the right gut microbes. So we would recommend to test mom's microbes too. Adding prebiotics, the food to the probiotics, certain strains of probiotics that are infant approved. So we're just recommending you things that are in market already that you can buy. And what's right now, a lot of parents are either not giving their kids probiotics or they're giving the kids probiotics with the wrong strains that their babies don't need. And then there's also the element of sometimes babies don't need a probiotic at all. They're good. Their gut looks pretty good. And there is a danger of over-supplementing when a baby doesn't need probiotics. And what happens if you have too much of a good thing, it kind of inhibits natural diversification, which we want as the baby grows older. So they're really in this first 1,000 days, there's really this fine-tuned development stage. And for me, when I found out like how profound it is, how easy it is to impact and course correct a child's gut. That was the sort of no-brainer to me. Why isn't there a product like this in the market where it's so impactful? These kids with a lot of these symptoms, like colicky symptoms, bloating, you know, digestion issues, eczema, when we course correct their gut in the early days, the symptoms really do go away. And so we start there with, you know, this where the science is really strong in the mom baby gut, and then kind of slowly make our way up to kids, older kids and adult gut, where it's more diverse, it's more mature. And frankly, in the adult microbiome space, there's a lot of snake oil in this space. It's really hard for consumers to differentiate whether or not like a product is scientifically backed or not, you know, is it just marketing? So from the beginning, I knew I wasn't a scientist or a doctor, but I took a lot of courses. I read a lot of papers, and from the papers I read, I went to the authors, the first authors on those papers, to ask if they would be our scientific advisor, because I knew I needed to establish credibility. And if I was to build a company that I want scientists to kind of sort of validate, or, you know, sort of see our company as a credible, scientifically backed company, I needed scientists on board. So my first instinct was to get the scientists on my board of advisor. And then I got the medical, the doctors, the MDs on board. So I really, you know, before starting Tiny Health, knew that I needed that support and backing and expertise to be building the right company that's credible.
That's great. And talk just a little bit about the advisors. Where you don't have to go into specific names and whatnot, but where are they coming from? Where are they working? Are they at some of the top hospitals? What's mm-hmm. their background?
Yeah, Dr. Noel Mueller is one of our top advisors. He comes from Johns Hopkins, and he does a lot of research in maternal and infant microbiome. So like frequently speak at conferences and cited as an expert in this area. We have other kind of scientists who are experts in the breast milk microbiome. We know that mom can transfer her vaginal and gut microbes during birth and labor, but she also continues to transfer her microbes while breastfeeding, for example. So she's an expert in that. And we have other kind of experts from Cornell and UCSD, UCSF. Our medical board also comes from, you know, they have experience in Kaiser Permanente and, yeah, like places like UCSF, for example. So
that's great. Good credibility mm-hmm. there. From a talk a little bit about the funding. Where are you at from a funding perspective? And what were some of the challenges that you went through as you were pitching, presenting, and receiving?
Yeah, we raised our seed round. That was the first round we raised in 2021. So admittedly, that was during a really good time in the founder's fundraising journey. We were only targeting 2 million, and we were quickly oversubscribed and raised 4.5 instead. So, you know, and now we're just kind of like coming off of closing a Series A fundraise, which we will announce soon. We haven't quite announced it yet, but I'm excited to in the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so this environment is really different, right, from a couple of years ago. But I've always been, you know, pretty disciplined about how I treat funding. This is my second venture funded company. I mentioned my earlier one, I had raised maybe a million plus, mm-hmm. but that was like a different time. That was in 2009. And so with the 4.5 million that I raised, I knew that, you know, I had only set out to raise 2 million. So what I did was I acted as if I only raised 2 million and almost like just kept 2.5 million in the bank for a rainy day or if I needed it. And again, like I remember my investors kind of like, Cheryl, why aren't you spending money? And I was just holding back. I'm like, we didn't have a product yet. We, you know, when I pitched the idea, it was on paper, frankly, it was just an idea. I didn't have a product, didn't even have a website. So I spent another year completing R&D before launching the product in April 2022, when tinyhealth.com was, you know, a thing, was publicly launched. So I didn't want to, it didn't make sense. Even when we launched, I wanted to take a really thoughtful, intentional approach and doing a lot of market validation. What was the messaging? Instead of just spending money on ads, it took us about 10 months before we actually spent money on ads. So it was a lot of experimentation and making sure our product was useful to users and they would come back and buy again, right? So in the same approach this time we're raising, closing the Series A, I think we would be very even more disciplined in this market and hiring and just like planning out the marketing around expansion.
Yep. That's really cool. What's the landscape like in the microbiome space, and what are some of the challenges that you see?
There's, you know, it's interesting. So in the baby space, the mom and baby space where we started, there's almost no competition. So we are the market leader right now, and we want to maintain that. As we expand into the adult space, we see more competition. So we want to be smart about how we do that and, you know, take a different approach. So expanding through perhaps partnerships and we have a B2B business kind of growing. We are primarily D2C right now from a revenue perspective, but coming up in 2024, certainly my focus is on a lot of B2B relationships and partnerships and clinical studies. A lot of nutrition companies are coming to us to use our vaginal and stool tests for their clinical trials and clinical studies. So I'm personally pretty excited about that opportunity.
What differentiates you as you look in the market and you're carving out your niche or your wedge to get into companies?
There's some education here. Like a lot of the stool tests that is in the market right now that are used by more functional holistic practitioners are using qPCR-based stool tests. So technology-wise, it's different. So we're using something very new called Schuiken metagenomic sequencing. And this is currently the gold standard in microbiome research. So kind of just educating practitioners who are already using stool tests about the differences and why this technology is more comprehensive and more superior is something that we're actively working on. I think it is challenging in terms of, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of, you know, it's really hard for consumers to untangle what microbiome companies or supplements are, legit and what is all marketing. So we certainly want to keep sort of, we have a brand that is very evidence-based right now, very scientific, very trustworthy, and sort of the relationship with our consumers are really strong right now because, you know, again, coming back to building the product for yourself and solving your own problem, our customers know that I built the company out of my own need and solving my own problem. So I am the customer. So when we launch our Facebook community, it certainly shines through that, you know, the company cares about their issues, and a lot of people who come to Tiny Health have a chronic condition that they're tackling. And, you know, as a mom of a kid with chronic condition, I understand their problems, right? So I think that is really important in building a brand and a business that is trustworthy. And then we try to grow from there.
You know, when companies go out and they're taking a new product or idea to market, they get the funding, they hope they get new customers, they can optimize their product, but they also try to scale. And sometimes there's things in the business you can't scale. It's the unscalable parts of the business. What are some of those things that you have today that are important for you to get right, but also understand that's part of the process of building a company?
Yeah, it's, funny. Like I recently had my last podcast, the interviewer said, because he's he's in his 50s, he's a male, and he uses a Tiny Health test. And he wrote in one day to hello@tinyhealth.com, just, you know, regular like support question. And I actually answered his email. And he was quite surprised. And he asked me about this in his podcast as well. Like, how are you, the CEO, a busy person, answering support questions? So this is the one unscalable thing that I'm still doing at the company today. I'm reading, I get all the hello@tinyhealth.com emails, and I skim through a lot of the subject headlines. To me, as a founder in a relatively early stage company, it's really important for me to continue doing that, even though it seems unscalable and it's impossible to read hundreds of emails every day. I do have my methods, and I think it really gives me like a heat map of our consumers happy. Do I see like a lot of like praises? Do I see complaints? And oftentimes when I see complaints, something is wrong operationally or from a fulfillment perspective, or are they unhappy with the report? I really zoom in and kind of reply my own because I want to understand like, how are we serving our customers? And I feel like sometimes as companies scale and founders grow their company, that is the element that maybe you hire other people to kind of fill. You hire a product manager. I certainly have a product manager, but I'm still on these emails because ultimately you're making a lot of product calls and product decisions. And for as long as I can, I want to remain on top of like, what is the customer sentiment?
Yeah, really cool. I love that. And being able to take that insight and then, you know, optimize the product or the service or make changes based on that feedback, I think is really cool and really valuable that many times doesn't quite get to the founders. Just want to touch on quickly as we wrap up here. You talked about direct to consumer and also B2B. Talk a little bit more about the business model. And as a consumer, what can they expect to pay to maybe do a test or to subscribe to your service? Kind of give us insights there.
Yeah. In the first year and a half, we learn a lot about who our customers are, what they're coming for, what they're needing. And in the coming months, we're actually kind of modifying our testing platform a little bit. In the past, you could have just got a single test for $199. Now we're kind of increasing that pricing a little bit to $249. That comes with a consult call so that you know, after getting your results back, you talk with the microbiome specialist to walk through your results and what are the actions you can take next. Oftentimes people feel more confident in taking the next step and less overwhelmed when they have the extra support. And we're also realizing that a lot of people are coming for a targeted problem, like a chronic condition, like a bloating problem or a constipation issue or long COVID even, for example. And so we're creating a bunch of programs that are targeted in helping you solve your chronic condition over 6 months. So it comes with two tests, a baseline test to get your current state. And then you get on almost a monthly call with a functional practitioner to work through your problems, and you end up with a stool test at the end to see how it's changed your microbiome. So that's for people with some sort of issue. And then there's a subset of our customers who are, they just want to optimize their microbiome. They're proactive about their gut health. They understand how important it is, and they just want to be testing their gut twice a year, for example. So we have a membership option for those people. You get two stool tests upfront for $399 a year. Comes with a consult call, and you can get additional kits for $169, so a cheaper rate for your whole family, because you can use it. Maybe you want to use for your child, but you want a lot of our parents, they get a baby gut test and then they test themselves. The mom tests, the dad tests, and then the grandma and the granddad comes in as well, older kids. So the whole family really gets in and improves their gut health, because it's a lifestyle. It's not just like that moment in time. Your gut changes according to what you eat, what you do, the supplements you take or don't take, if you have an illness, if you travel, or even move to a different state. Like when we moved from California to Texas, our food and supply source changed and our whole family's microbiome took a dive for the worse. So now we're kind of like resourcing a lot of our food, doing a whole house filter to really improve our gut health. So there's just a lot of reasons why someone would want to proactively test their gut health and even vaginal health every year. It's just like how now there's a lot of startups coming out with blood biomarkers, hormone tests and things like that to test proactively, make sure you're proactive about your overall health.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it seems like everything is coming to the home, which is great, you know, from Amazon getting your products to now you can do health checks. And I don't see how that's going away anytime soon. In fact, I've heard that there is already diagnostic tests and, you know, CT scanners and all sorts of crazy things that you can now buy at very low cost and have in your home, and, you know, not have to go to the doctor every time you want to take a look at your health and, you know, send your records in. And self-service seems to be the way to go.
Yeah. And ultimately I think consumers are waking up to the theme of proactive healthcare, right? I mean, our healthcare system is broken in the sense that it's sick care. You only go to the doctor when you're sick, but that's too late. And so a lot of consumers are, you know, following a lot of health podcasters like Andrew Huberman or Peter Attia or Rhonda Patrick, who proactively, you know, look at biomarkers and prevention, taking preventative actions to improve your health. So I think, you know, especially like the Gen Zs are moving towards like more proactive care. So it's definitely something that we're noticing, catching on. And so gut health is really part of it.
Yeah. especially for your kids. I mean, you want to do everything you can for your kids. And if you can do things proactively early on and change their life or make their life better, why would you not try that? So I love what you're creating. I really, I think it could be applied to not just the kids, but the families and yourself. And, you know, if it improves your life as a founder too, whether it's health and energy and lifestyle and all those things, you know, sign me up. So I'll be a customer of you, of yours moving forward. let's switch gears here a little bit to just, you know, you as a person, three questions, just a little bit more specific to you. You know, the roller coaster ride of a startup is a lot of ups and downs, left and right experiences. What do you do to keep a good perspective, to stay mentally and maybe physically healthy and also positive?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, it comes back to, again, like, you know, wellness, right? Like, I think I fall into the trap too. I'm in the wellness space, but I was sacrificing my sleep for, you know, just being overworked and working to 1 a.m. So I started investing in myself and buying an Oura Ring. And that really is a game changer for me. So prioritizing sleep is huge, because I just learned that, you know, you get the deep sleep in the earlier in the night. So sleeping at one, you're missing a lot of the deep restorative immune building sleep. And then my kids, when they wake up, they wake me up early. So the last part of your sleep is the REM part, right? That helps with memory and regeneration and things like that. So I was kind of killing myself by missing the deep sleep and the REM sleep. So now I'm really trying to change all that, sleeping earlier and waking up earlier. So it keeps me mentally focused and healthy, because I really need to protect that to be the best CEO and founder. So I really think that has been game changing for me.
Yeah, that's really cool. What's some insight you can share with the listeners, as an angel investor or from other entrepreneurs that have shared with you, that you think is priceless as they build their own startup?
I think this is also through personal experiences. I mentioned being really disciplined about funding and money. Like, I think there's still a lot of emphasis put on fundraising, as success. You know, they equate how much money you've raised to success. But for me, you're selling equity. You're giving away a big portion of your company. Is that really a time you should celebrate, right? So I take it really seriously. The amount of money we've raised is really hard earn money, right? And have a responsibility. So the number one mistake I feel like founders make when they get a fresh round of funding is to hire, like they hire, maybe even overhire, right? So the way I approach it is, of course, we have some urgent hires to fill, and that's why we're raising money. But beyond the core group, I try to hire contractors or consultants before and kind of like tap out of that until we're absolutely sure we need to hire a full-time person. Because, you know, once you've made a full-time hire, it's like something you can't easily remove. And that's why, you know, in 2021, when a ton of companies raised a lot of money at a crazy amount of valuation, you know, we're seeing all the layoffs happening now, right? Because they hired too quickly. So trying to recognize, you know, that mistake and try not to make it with our new fresh round of funding is to be really careful about hiring plans. And, you know, I think I am pushing my team, you know, everyone is doing about 2-3 persons jobs. But it is what's needed in a small scaling startup. And we really need to be tapping out until we make that full-time hire. So be very conscious about the next person that you bring into your company full-time.
Yeah, that's great. For you, where do you go or what do you do to get inspired, to get creative, to think big when you have to continue to innovate and optimize your company? What works for you?
You know, a lot of great ideas come to me at bedtime, which is not great for my sleep. I just like, you know, this is the part where my mind is racing and I have so many ideas, and I do have a notepad next to my bed and I write down ideas. I'm shifting that towards my sauna time. So I'm, you know, sort of investing in more sauna. Like, you know, there's a lot of health benefits to doing sauna and cold plunges and whatnot. So the 20 minutes, I'm trying to do like 5 times a week, 20 minutes each time.
Oh,
so
wow.
Shifting that, you know, towards a little bit end of the day, because that's usually, I'm a night person and some people are morning people. So depending on who you are, but for me, the ideas come at night. And so that 20 minutes that I can't bring my phone in, or kind of, you know, my Zen time, is where I go to think and brainstorm new ideas and, you know, like trying to be better at bringing a notepad in to write ideas down in my sauna times.
I love that. Well, you know, if anybody wants to find you or find Tiny Health, where do they go and how do they buy your product?
Yeah, our website is tinyhealth.com. Tiny is not just for babies or kids, but it's also the tiny microbes in your gut. So it's a really expandable name and hopefully memorable. And as I mentioned earlier, I do read a lot of hello@tinyhealth.com emails still. So if you want to reach me, you can always just send an email and I'll probably read it.
Very cool. Well, Cheryl, thanks so much for joining. Appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, having the courage to do it, and to the listeners for listening. It means a lot to me that you spent your time with us today. I'm your host, Jake Aaron Villarreal, signing off for now. I can't wait to catch up with you all in the next episode. Until then, Cheryl, listeners, take care.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, I want to give a big shout out to all the entrepreneurs that have joined to make this podcast possible. And for all the listeners for listening, it means the world to me that you chose to spend your time with us today. I'm your host, Jake Aaron Villarreal, signing off for now, but can't wait to connect with you all soon on the next episode. Take care. This show is sponsored by Match Relevant, a company that helps venture-backed startups find the best people in the market, and they do it in three simple steps. First, they sit down with founders to understand their story. Second, they tell their story into multiple candidate channels. And third, they schedule interviews within 48 hours. Find us at matchrelevant.com to learn more about how we do it.